growling, its pincers snapping at the air. It reached down with one of its huge, clawed hands and picked up the upper half of the servitor. It tore the head off and dropped the rest of the corpse. It wrapped its tongue around the head, coating it with viscous drool, and the flesh sloughed off the skull in a thick, pinkish stew. The monster held out the skull before it, mirroring and mocking me. Its tongue withdrew into its huge jaws, then snaked out again. And, in the midst of a triumphant roar, came the chant again.
Hail! 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 Changer of ways!
The Emperor had failed me, and the monster charged. It hurled the servitor's skull, smashing it against the wall by my shoulder. Abandoned, bereft, I ran. I looked back as I reached the beginning of the tunnel's passage through the denser part of the wreckage. The thing, unhurried, stalked down the corridor in great strides. It crouched forwards, its deformed head brushing the ceiling. Its spikes scraped the walls on both sides. I shoved past a servitor trudging back the way I had come. Unable to deviate from its set task, it headed directly for the monster. I heard a crunch and squelch as it collided with the abomination. I did not look back again. The tunnel seemed endless, a jagged zigzag through darkness. I banged into corners and bounced off walls as I ran. Protrusions tore at my vestments, my sacred robes, my mark of a useless office. I was trailing rags when at last I saw the lights of Gamma Bay ahead of me. I plunged towards them, as the bay meant safety. I was not yet done with illusions. Behind me, the heavy, clawed tread of the beast boomed and pounded, a drumbeat punctuating the rhythmic, ululating cries of
Hail! 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 Hail!
As I leapt from the wreckage and into the bay, the monster's two mouths shrieked in unison. Because the bay had promised light, I had seen it as safety. Now, it was just an even vaster space for me to cross. The open doors were another world away. The klaxons here were deafening, their wails reverberating off the walls, and the army of servitors ignored them, locked into their appointed tasks, cutting wreckage apart and hauling detritus to the disposal. The space was filled with the waste of the dead ship, a maze of industrial bones I had to navigate to reach the doors. I ran, jerking around the field of demolition, and the deck vibrated with new impacts as the monster entered the bay. I wished for a plasma cutter as I sprinted past the servitors, my lungs rasping from the effort. I had no idea if a cutter would have an effect on the monster. I just wanted anything at all that might grant me a slither of hope. I was surrounded by beings whose tools could be used as weapons against the monster, but they could never attack it of their own accord. I was less than a quarter of the way across the bay, too terrified to look back and see how close I was to my end, when I came around a mound of debris on which servitors worked like ants on a hill, and saw that I was no longer alone. There was a straight path ahead of me through the disassembled wreckage, extending halfway to the doors, and Howsam was running towards me. He looked past my shoulder, and his eyes widened. At the same moment, there was an enormous crash of metal being sheared apart.
Changer of ways!
The idiot prayer filled the bay, drowning out the work of the servitors. Kill it! I screamed. It was a pointless cry, a howl of weakness and fear. I think there was guilt there, too. But how could I have known what I would unleash? I whirled as something huge crashed behind me. The monster struck a scaffolded wedge of hull with such force that the mass hurtled like a rolling boulder towards us. Servitors went down under it, their crushed bodies slicking the metal. I threw myself to the side with such panicked energy that I tripped and fell. Sobbing, I crawled, scrabbling at the floor, moving with the crabbed, clumsy sluggishness of nightmares. The wreckage thudded past less than a yard from my legs and collided with another work emplacement. The support structures collapsed, and the towering hull ribs toppled over. A forest of iron and adamantium alloy crashed to the deck, shaking the floor, pulverizing servitors. Plasma cutters slashed wildly with the wielder's death throes. A beam burned the air just over my head. The monster strode through the ruin it had created, singing praise and lashing out. Its pincer limbs seized servitors as if by reflex. The abomination did not even look at them as it crushed heads and severed legs. Its clawed hands grabbed anything it could reach and hurled metal and flesh across the bay. A servitor arced upwards and slammed into the wall above the disposal. The impact shattered its bones to dust, and it dropped a soft bag of flesh into the open maw of the disposal. Howson dragged me to my feet.
"Keep moving!"
he shouted, and shoved me in the direction of the doors. I stumbled forwards, my feet trying to learn how to run again. A tracked servitor came between us, rolling towards the collapse. Its plasma cutter was ignited, beam low, in readiness for the work of cutting through the fallen wreckage. I paused, staring at the cutter as it passed so close to me. If only there was a way of using it.
"What are you waiting for?" Howson shouted. "Run, you fool!"
The monster sank its four-pronged jaw into the chest of the servitor and yanked out its heart. The servitor died without a sound, and the creature roared, furious at the lack of response to its slaughter. It turned to look at us.
"The ways!"
The tongue mouth screamed, and the monster came towards us. Its long, serpentine eyes seized mine. I couldn't move. The gaze was utterly mad, yet burned with hideous knowledge. The monster looked through to the depths of my soul. It promised me to give me the truths that would make me join it in insanity.
"Run!"
Howson shouted again. I couldn't move. The monster came for us. Howson cursed and leapt onto the back of the tracked servitor. He seized its tool arm and forced the plasma cutter around to face the horror. The beam sliced through the creature's shoulder. It severed the right pincer arm. Black ichor jetted from the wound, splashing over the servitor. The monster screamed at the cutter's burn and stepped back. The servitor juddered, nerves misfiring as its skin melted under the touch of the ichor. Spatters of the foul liquid fell on Howson. Smoke rose from his arm and he was screaming, but he still managed to reach forwards and fire the plasma cutter again, slashing diagonally down the monster's torso. Writhing tentacles erupted from the wound. At its shoulder, a flood of eyes streamed out of the injury until a thick mount of flesh rose from the shoulder, a single great eye at its peak. It kept growing, as if it were a tumorous stalagmite. A vertical split appeared in the flesh. It tore wide, becoming a mouth filled with hundreds of needle teeth, as long as my hand. And now the monster had a new voice.
"Hail, hail, hail, changer of ways!"
The other pincer arm snapped forwards, reached around the servitor and grabbed Howson around the chest. It snatched him up. The monster held him aloft for a moment. It turned its head like a bird, feathering him with the full length of one of its eyes. Its tongue snaked around his upper chest. His shrieks became muffled as it surrounded his head. The monster sighed, as if it had been looking for him. The tongue slithered off Howson, leaving him covered in a thick coating of the corrosive saliva. He screamed and writhed, and the monster brought him to its shoulder more. The rows of teeth snapped open and shut, catching Howson's chest and face. His arms went rigid with explosive agony. I heard the cracking as the monster bit through the front half of his skull. And now Howson's arms went limp. The beast devoured him. I should say it consumed him. After the first two bites, the mouth chewed and slurped. The monster seemed to be sucking Howson into the maw. His body began to flap, and it was too loose. His arms bent smoothly. They were unnaturally flexible, as if the bones inside turned to string. His body flattened. Ripples ran through it. The monster, drinking his flesh. He was pressed against the mound on the shoulder. Howson's skin merged with the creature's exoskeleton. Howson became vague. The more the monster chewed and swallowed, the more Howson became part of its grotesque body. I started to move again, stumbling backwards, away from the horror, but I could not look away. I wanted to run. I did not want to throw away Howson's sacrifice, but the sight held me. You think you would have run? I think you're wrong. What I saw was the most heretical nightmare made real. I can tell you what I saw. I can describe it, but I cannot give you the experience of witnessing it. If your faith is strong, it will hold the implications of what I saw at bay. You will not accept them, because to accept them would shatter your faith. You may say that you believe what I am telling you. Perhaps you think you do. But at the deepest level, you do not. You cannot. If you had been there, you would understand. Because you would have been frozen too. Howson reacted. Yes, he did. He was not an ecclesiarch. He did not fully comprehend what he was seeing. The monster finished consuming Howson. It absorbed his body completely, but a trace of him remained. In the rippling exoskeleton of the monster's chest, below the right shoulder, I could see Howson's face. It was a shadow, like a brass rubbing of his features. His mouth was wide with pain, his eyes wide with horror. His face moved. It was the image of his soul, trapped in the being of the abomination.
"Praise the change!" the three voices of the monster cried.
Finally, the spell broke, and I could run.
"Praise change!"
the monster howled. I screamed, trying to blot out the sound of that unholy prayer. The creature hooted and roared and made a liquid gargling sound that I think was laughter. I heard it lurch forwards again, but I was sprinting now, weaving around the islands of scaffolding. My desperation had made me clumsy. Now it gave me wings. Even as another crash happened behind me, my way to the doors was clear. Mesa was on one side of the doorway, his hand on the wall controls, ready to slam the doors shut and seal them. He gestured at me to run faster. Then he was looking past me in horror, and the pounding of heavy feet closed in. I stopped screaming. I took deep, ragged breaths, drawing on every ounce of strength I had to escape my pursuer. Mesa was shouting at me, but I could not hear him for the pounding of my blood in my ears and the thumping of the monster's tread. As I approached, Mesa slammed his hand against a stud. I leapt forwards. The first set of doors shuddered down, inches behind me. I fell and rolled under the second set. I had a momentary glimpse of a wall of metal rushing for me, and then I was through. I lay, gasping on the floor, feeling the vibrations fade from the emergency closure. The monster smashed against the barriers. I held my breath, waiting for it to claw through one door and then the other. It did not. The sound of the battering remained muffled, and I could barely hear the ranting prayer over the wailing of the klaxons. Roan and Kren were running down the hall towards us. It had only been a few minutes since I had triggered the alarms.
"What is that creature?"
Mesa asked, his voice broken.
"Lies," I whispered.
"It's a thing of lies." I had to tell myself that. It was the only way I could keep myself from screaming forever.
It took Housen,
Mesa said, his voice grey. Is there any chance? Rome began. No, I said. I swallowed. He saved my life. Mesa and Kren looked at me with open hatred. The four of us faced the door, listening to the muffled blows and the three entwined voices. We could not make out the words. The sound was bad enough. Disturbing. At a spiritual level.
What is that thing? Rone asked.
The answer I had given Mesa was not enough. It was a cowardly evasion, and I abandoned it.
I don't know exactly, I said. It was the Space Marine.
He changed in stasis?
Kren asked, disbelieving. No, I said. I turned away from their stares. I looked at my hands. They were shaking. I could almost see Housen's blood coating them.
What did you do? Said Rone.
What I thought was right. I was wrong. I glanced up at her. I encountered coldness and judgment. I swallowed the pain in my throat.
Emperor, I thought, grant me the chance of redemption.
I did not expect an answer. A pic screen beside the door showed a frozen image of the monster. Kren stared at it.
Is it some kind of mutation?
She wondered. I could have just nodded. I could have said nothing. That response would have sufficed. Only I could not bear for the burden of truth to be mine alone.
No,
I said. Something worse than that. To my relief, Mesa was nodding. He had seen and heard it, and so already knew more than he liked.
I heard its prayer, he said.
It prays?
Kren's eyes were wide.
Not to the Emperor. To something else.
It spoke a name, I said. It sounded like Zinch.
What does that mean?
Rone asked. I don't know. This was never in your religious training? No, but whatever it is, it seems to answer prayers.
Boom! Boom! Boom!
From the other side of the door. Relentless. Untiring.
Do you think the doors will hold?
Rone asked Mesa. He grimaced.
I want to say yes.
Is that good enough to trust them with our lives?
Said Kren. I wouldn't, I said.
Then we reinforce them, said Rone. There's enough debris in Delta Bay to plunk this corridor completely. We need to destroy it.
I'm sure we do, Rone snapped. Do we know how to do that? I shook my head.
Then let's concentrate first on preventing it from getting us.
The others agreed, and they threw themselves into the task. The work progressed quickly. Rone retasked the servitors of Delta Bay, and her army dragged tons of disassembled lifter to the corridor outside Gamma. Once the process was underway, and a stream of track servitors were hauling the material, she redirected others to begin constructing the barricade. Mesa and Kren oversaw the assembly, and I watched a dense wall of metal build up in front of the door. There was nothing I could do to help. I hovered, useless, fighting shame and trying to damp down my terror. I watched the screen next to the door. The successive pics showed the monster still trying to batter its way through. I was grateful that the noise of the construction blotted out the sounds of the creature's blows and prayers. I did not like looking at the images. The obscenity of the monster's form ate at me. There was no room for such things in any understanding I had of the Imperial Creed. Its presence was a tumour upon reality itself. When I looked away from the screen, I could pretend, for brief moments, that the monster was not there. The pretense was a weak, pointless exercise. Yet I needed to do it. If I didn't, I forgot to breathe. The crew and the servitors laboured until the barricade was floor to ceiling and extended halfway across the hallway. Its composite nature was clear, and it bristled with jagged protrusions. At the same time, The wreckage was so densely packed I could not have inserted a finger between the seams of welded metal. I could not imagine Gamma Bay ever being accessible again. When the work was done, Roan changed the tasks of the servitors yet again. Two lines of them formed a semicircle around the barricade, their plasma cutters inert but ready to ignite the instant something emerged from the bay.
"Can that thing be harmed?" Kren asked.
"Housen hurt it," I said. "It recovered quickly, but it screamed when the plasma cutters burned it."
"That's something at least," said Roan.
I turned around, eyeing the ranks of motionless servitors.
"Can they really fight?" I asked Roan.
"They don't fight. They will simply attempt to cut apart any mobile wreckage, which is how they will perceive that creature." With the work done, we could hear the pounding of the doors, even through the massive wall of the barricade.
"This won't be enough," I said.
"It's a start," said Roan. We left the corridor ring leading to the base and moved to the bridge. There were more pick screens here, fed by more lenses, giving us a better sense of the situation in Gamma Bay. We were at last far enough away that we could not hear the creature. The station seemed secure, its walls and doors solid. Free of the soul-eroding cries, I felt stronger, as if we had retreated to a fortress and could now prepare a true counter-attack. I saw the resolve strengthen in the others, too. Where we differed was that I did not trust my bravado.
"Oswick is right," said Roan, eyeing the images of the monster. "Containment isn't enough. We have to destroy this thing."
"Are we sure we can?" I said.
The question had to be asked.
I didn't worry about how the others would look at me. That damage had already been done.
"If it can be hurt, it can be killed," said Mesa.
"Perhaps," I said, "but by us? Wouldn't it be better to leave the Ligurian and wait for a military solution?" I knew we could not wait aboard. There was no telling how many weeks or months it would be before someone finally came.
"Leave," Roan said.
She rolled her eyes. The other two chuckled bleakly.
"How do you propose we do that?" she asked.
"Couldn't we take the tug?"
"That's a one-person craft," said Kren.
"The escape pod, then?" It nestled inside a blister on the outer hull, next to the tug's docking station. There was more bitter laughter.
"I thought you understood the nature of this facility," said Roan.
"What do you mean?"
"The design of the station is older than its current use," she said. "The life pod is a relic from when shipbreakers were still in orbit around inhabited worlds. It is for getting to the surface. There is no steering, no propulsion after initial launch. There are provisions for 2 days with a full crew aboard."
"Then we ration as much as necessary. The discipline's fire will be here to get me in 8 days."
"How are you planning to ration oxygen?" Kren asked.
"Oh," I said. I began to grasp, on a visceral level, what it really meant to be expendable. This was different than on the battlefield. Here, the crew of the Ligurian was thrown away from the start.
"Have we called for help?"
"I'll do that now," said Kren. She turned to the Vox controls. "But don't expect rescue. A cry for help from a shipbreaker is a signal for everyone else to get as far away as possible."
"What about the colony ship?"
I was grasping at anything at all now. I wanted to get off the station.
"The Wind of Faith was barely voidworthy when it arrived," said Roan.
"We have worked on it. I'd be surprised if we could even get it powered up again."
"But you might be able to."
She and Mesa exchanged a look. "If there was no other choice," she began.
"Why are we talking about abandoning the station?" Kren asked. "If we can destroy this thing, then we should do it."
"How?" I asked.
"Can we get the servitors inside the bay to attack it?"
"Not without retasking them," Roan said. "And I can't do that without access to them."
"Meaning you would have to be in the bay?"
"Exactly."
"So," said Mesa, "we have to kill it without breaking its quarantine."
"Vent the bay," said Kren.
Mesa nodded and started flipping toggles. Warning runes flashed on the console as he made his way across the rows. "Let it be this simple," I prayed. "Emperor, let it be this simple. Let the consequences of my sin end here." I had Hausen's blood on my hands. I would have given a lot to put aside the terror, and have only the guilt to shoulder. Before he released the wreckage, Mesa held the outer door open. Klaxon sounded in anger at the danger he was courting. He shut down all the safety overrides, then pulled back on the claw release. It was a massive iron lever, and he had to use both hands to move it. A final confirmation of an irrevocable command. The station shuddered as the void seal was broken and the claws pulled back from the wreckage. I turned away from the pick screens to look out the viewport. The Space Marine's vessel drifted gradually away from Gamma Bay. A cloud of frozen water vapour rushed out of the bay, haloing the claws as they retracted. In the silence, and from this distance, there seemed to be no violence, only the gradual separation of dancers at the end of a ball. But the klaxon screamed, and the deck vibrated from the strain. And then I saw that violence had come to Gamma Bay. Wreckage followed the vapour, and with it the tiny figures of servitors, hundreds of them, twitching their last as they sought to breathe in the void. A gale of escaping air tossed them against and around the departing wreckage. The distance between the ship and the Ligurian grew with the station's slow rotation. I still held my breath, half expecting the ship to come to life, reverse course and collide with the station. But there was no fool aboard. There was nothing aboard. It was only a dead thing now. And it floated further and further away, disappearing into the eternal dark as it moved beyond the lights of the facility. My fear was unfounded, but so was my hope. I had not seen the figure of the monster among the servitors. "It hasn't moved," Kren said, sounding impressed and frightened in equal measure. I looked back at the pick screens. The images succeeded each other, showing the bay stripped of servitors and the lighter wreckage. The monster was in the same position in every pict. It had been knocked back into a work island as decompression began, and had grabbed the scaffolding. It was hunched forwards against the wind.
"Is it bigger than it was?" Mesa asked me.
"It looks swollen," I said. The monster's back had become a spiked dome. The windstorm diminished, then stopped. A vacuum claimed the bay. Pict after pict appeared on the screens, and the monster never moved.
"Any chance it's dead?" Kren wondered.
"It's still standing," said Roan. "I think we should assume it lives." Mesa's hands hovered over the controls.
"I don't want to leave the outer door open," he said. "There's always the chance of another breach."
Roan nodded. "Open or close makes no difference now, does it?"
"It doesn't."
Mesa flipped back a number of the toggles, and the door Iris shut.
"I'm keeping the oxygen turned off."
"So what now?" Kren asked. "How do we expel it?"
"Amputation," Roan said softly. Mesa's eyes widened.
"You want to break off part of the facility?
Is it possible?"
"I'm not sure."
Mesa moved to a pick table in the center of the bridge. He called up hololithic maps of the station. We stood around the table and waited while he contemplated the lines.
"I'm no tech priest," he said at last. "We're risking a lot by not knowing the proper rituals."
"But," Roan encouraged.
"But life support is concentrated in the hub. Ventilation and power feed into the base from the center, and there is little circulation between them."
He drew a finger around Gamma Bay. A red line followed his gesture, isolating the bay.
"What we'll be doing is cutting the bay off. We don't have to reroute anything. We've already killed the oxygen. I'll do the same to the power, once we no longer need to see what is going on in there."
"We'll have to be careful with cutting until then, but we can manage," said Roan.
"You make it sound so simple," I said.
"It isn't," said Kren.
"It's what we do," said Roan. "We break ships.
We're just breaking our own this time.
And if that piece collides with the rest? My earlier fear seemed much more plausible now.
Explosive charges.
Roan leaned closer to the diagram, calculating. If we put them in the right positions, they'll give the bay enough motive force to move it away safely.
I'll sort out the trajectories, said Kren.
Roan looked back at the bay's pig screens. The beast still hasn't moved, she said. We haven't killed it, but maybe the void has it immobilized. We have our chance. Let's use it.
Kren and Mesa turned to the cogitators to begin calculating the lines on which they would break the Ligurian apart.
Roan headed for the bridge door. She had to prepare the hordes of servitors in the other bays.
What can I do?
I asked her. She paused. She gazed at me, her face expressionless.
Monitor our foe, she said. Let us know if it moves.
If there's anything else, I began.
You've done enough, she said, and strode off the bridge.
The work began. I did as I was told, and nothing else. There was nothing else for me. I had less use than a servitor. I could not even preach to the crew. I could not stir their courage. I did not think they wanted to hear anything I had to say, and not because their faith was wanting. They would hear a fool and a hypocrite.
Roan, Mesa and Kren began the systematic process of dissembling a portion of the station. They worked with the same focus of purpose that they did on the wrecks they collected. There was, in the end, very little difference between the work they did to live and the work they did now to survive. A mistake in either case could mean disaster. I wanted them to hurry, and I didn't want to die, so I said nothing, trusting their skill, and kept my exhortations inside my head. One of the first things Mesa did was remove several plasma cutters from the servitors. The tools were in the bridge now, our weapons of last resort. I did not believe they could kill the monster. They could hurt it, though, or so I felt reasonably sure. Their presence gave me a measure of comfort. I stayed out of the way of the work and watched the screens. Hour after hour went by, and the monster never moved. I speculated that it had stored oxygen in its swollen back, though I could not imagine how, or guess how long the supply might last. The speculation, like everything about me, was pointless. I prayed, too. I prayed while I stared at the monster. I prayed during my brief periods of rest, when one of the others would relieve me. I prayed for guidance, for strength, for redemption. And I prayed for a sign, any sign, that the Emperor had not turned his back on me. Or worse, my greatest fear, that I was directing my prayers to nothingness. Threatened to become something more terrible. A conviction. I did not want that to happen. I told myself that it was my own weakness that was leading me down this path. I was being left alone with my thoughts for too long. I envied the others. They had the work to keep them busy. Their thoughts were focused on the urgency of their task. They had no room for doubts, and they felt no guilt. The few conversations I had were brief and brought me no comfort. They were little more than requests for the status of the monster, and my answer was always the same. It had not moved. Once, when Mesa came through and checked, I tried to engage him in a longer discussion. We have the door to Gamma Bay properly barricaded, I said. What about the walls? Do you think they're strong enough?
If they aren't, we're sure to find out.
Is there something we should do?
We're doing it. It can't break through the walls if it isn't on the station.
He wasn't being sarcastic. I felt the rebuke all the same. When it came to the physical realities of our situation, there was nothing I could suggest that the others had not already considered. This was their domain, not mine. My domain should have been the spiritual threat, and I had abdicated my duty there.
Roan, Kren and Mesa worked relentlessly, but what they were attempting was a massive undertaking.
It took time, and they needed to rest, too. When they had cut through almost half the thickness of the facility's hull, a moment came when Kren relieved me on the bridge, and Roan staggered past on the way to her quarters to sleep. I followed her. If I had been asked what I hoped to accomplish, I would not have been able to answer. We had not exchanged more than a few words since I had freed the monster, and I could not let things remain as they were between us. I had no clear idea of how I would make things better, though I was driven by the unformed but urgent need for redemption. She could give me that. A sign from her would feel like a blessing from the Emperor. Roan had collapsed on her cot when I reached her doorway. She groaned when she saw me.
Oh, go away, Oswick, let me sleep.
I just wanted to ask, again, if there's something more I can do. Anything at all.
You've done enough. Halson is dead because of you.
Her judgment was definitive. I nodded and turned to go. Before I could leave, though, she sat up.
Wait, she said. I have to know. Why did you do it?
I thought it was the right thing to do.
Really?
Yes, I said defensively.
Why did you think it was right?
He was an angel of the Emperor. It was wrong to keep him frozen. I flailed about for any answer that would give me absolution in her eyes. There was none to be found. I was desperate for anything that I could believe was the truth, other than the truth that I could not face. My efforts were pathetic to my own ears, and her eyes grew even colder. Roan confronted me with the truth I was trying to avoid.
You did it because you were angry with me, she said. Were you that shallow a fool?
She waited for me to prove her wrong, to show that I was driven by more than hurt feelings. I was silent at first. I couldn't look at her. I stared at the floor next to her cot.
Yes, I said at last.
But not just because of that. This was also true. There were the doubts that had driven me to seek escape with her in the first place. The Space Marine had religious certainty. I needed that.
And did you get it?
She turned the question into an accusation. The monster prays, I said softly. It is sure of its God. It has been blessed by its God.
What are you saying? Roan asked, horrified.
I don't know. Only what I witnessed. I took a deep, shuddering breath of pain.
I confronted the creature with the icon of the Emperor. I tried to banish it in his name. I failed. The icon did nothing.
Then perhaps it is a mutation, she said. Nothing more.
It isn't. You know it isn't.
She didn't contradict me.
Then it is your faith that is too weak.
Yes, I said. That was still the most comforting of answers. The alternative ate at my heart like a cancer.
Which is proof of what I've been telling you all along. I am unfit. I was tested and I failed in every possible way. What do you want from me?
What I said. To help. I need a way back, Legia. I need to atone. She sighed.
Your needs are not uppermost in my mind right now.
A short blast of a klaxon saved me from the need to answer. It was a signal of alarm from Kren. Roan shot up off the bed and was past me, through the doorway and out of her quarters before I had taken two steps. I hurried to catch up and managed to reach the bridge just ahead of Mesa.
What is it? Roan asked. Kren pointed at the monitor.
It's gone. We gathered around the screen. The region of the bay it showed was empty.
Did you see which way it was moving?
Mesa asked. No, it disappeared between peaks. How fast can it move? Rhone wondered. There were only a few seconds between each image capture.
So where is it? Said Mesa.
He moved from one screen to the next. Between them, the row showed the entirety of Gamma Bay. There was no sign of the creature. A helpless silence fell. We were statues, each waiting for someone else to take the initiative, to find the solution, to tell us what we must do. We had been braced for the creature to begin smashing at the doors again. We had no contingencies if it broke through, but we had gone ahead with the plan. We had had faith that there was time to put it into action. We had been waiting for the horror to start moving again. We were unprepared for its absence. How close are we to being able to sever Gamma Bay? I asked.
What does it matter? Said Kren. If it's gone, what's the good in cutting the bay loose? What if it's still there, hiding under wreckage? Why would it do that?
To fool us. Maybe it knows what we've been trying to do.
If it's still there, we'll find it, said Mesa.
He worked the controls, froze the march of successive picks, and called up earlier images.
It can't have hidden without displacing the wreck. Look for differences between these picks and the current ones.
We studied the screens. The task was rendered more difficult by the disorder left behind by the venting. The heavier wreckage had not been blown into the void, but almost all the scaffolding at the work islands had fallen, and the floor was strewn with the displaced masses. We had to look over every square foot of the bay. Mesa was right, though. If there was a change, it should be obvious once we spotted it. There was nothing.
It didn't get out the door, Mesa fumed. It didn't cut through the walls, so where is it?
I went back to the first monitor and selected the last image of the monster, then the first of its absence. I wanted to see something in the way the monster crouched that we had missed before. There was nothing. It was there, and then it wasn't. As if it had blinked out of existence. I flipped back and forth between the picks, unwilling to accept the impossible. Then I saw it.
What's this? I asked.
In the first pict, showing the empty space where the monster had just been, there was a rectangular piece of metal on the floor. Its surface was taken up by thick mesh. It was not there in the earlier pics. Mesa looked over my shoulder.
That's one of the ventilation grills.
Throne, said Rhone.
It's in the shafts.
How?
Mesa objected.
One of us can only barely squeeze in. It's several times too large.
I don't know how, said Rhone, but that's where it is.
We fell quiet again. We looked around at the black iron of the walls and the ribbed, shallow dome of the ceiling, as if the creature would suddenly be revealed to us. Every click and chug and groan of the machinery of the facility took on new significance. Nothing was normal any longer. Every sound was the approach of the beast. I turned around slowly, feeling utterly exposed. What do we do? I asked. I wanted the certainty of either action or of refuge as desperately as I had needed the certainty of faith earlier. No one answered. We grabbed plasma cutters, their comfort suddenly seeming very poor. I held the bulky tool with both hands. My throat was dry. If I have to fire, I thought, I'm already lost.
What do we do?
I said again, growing frantic.
Be quiet!
Kren hissed. I obeyed. I turned and turned, ears straining for the metal creaks that would herald my doom. Every second that passed with nothing closing in built up an illusion that the next second would also be quiet. I plunged into a deep irrationality of hope. Perhaps, I thought, if I listened hard enough, I would never hear what I feared to hear.
There, Rhone whispered.
Voices slithered out of the ventilation grills. They were faint. That made them no less terrible. The monster's hideous prayer came for us.
Hail, 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 changer of ways.
The metal confines of the shafts reverberated with echoes, filling the bridge with the sound of a distant, idiot choir. The cries became louder and more distinct. There were far more than three voices now. There was still the deep, thunderous growl. It surrounded a myriad of high trills that sank into my ears like acid. I had a vision of an army of filaments coiling through the ventilation shaft, shrieking praise to their foul god.
"Where is it coming from?" said Mesa.
The chanting was so loud, it seemed to emerge from all the grills at once. Metal groaned underneath the weight of a great bulk, almost inaudible beneath the rhythmic screaming. The monster was almost upon us, and we still did not know where to turn.
"We can't stay here," said Roan, and rolled the dice.
She made for the exit that would lead to the ring corridors. I started to follow, and then the ceiling ripped open. The grill in the center of the dome crashed to the deck. Metal peeled back like blackened petals, and the monster plunged down to the center of the bridge. It struck with such force that the bridge shook, throwing us off balance. The monster rose to its full height and screamed with 100 voices.
"Changer of ways!"
The creature had transformed. Though it had come for us through narrow shafts, it had grown. When it reared up, it was almost 15 feet tall. Almost every trace of the human had vanished from its shape. The rippling exoskeleton was gone, replaced by rubbery, slime-coated flesh that flashed iridescent night blue and muscle pink. Instead of the two muscular legs, the beast's torso ended in a long, thick, slug-like tail, fringed with hundreds of scaled insectoid legs. Its arms were longer and more flexible than before, and looked both jellied and strong enough to rip the hull open. Even the pincer arms slashed the air like a whip. The jaws of the pincer glinted with rows of gleaming ivory teeth. They were human, though filed into broken, jagged points. The mound on the shoulder had lengthened, as had the monster's neck, and the two had wrapped around each other, a helix of tensing, flexing, oozing muscle. The head had become a cluster of maws, reptilian, serpentine, snapping and slathering on all sides. Their sprouting, multi-forked tongues spewed hissing ichor, and they vibrated so quickly they created a humming, ear-splitting song. Tentacles covered the body. Some were the length of a human finger, others were as long as the arms. They seemed to have spread over the creature like a disease, radiating outwards from the chest wound Howson had given it. There were scores of them, and they ended in mouths. The tentacles were the choir. They were throats as well as arms. Their circular jaws opened and closed, pursing puckered, suppurating lips and opening them to release air and shriek their part of the refrain. The eyes had spread too. The long eyes had moved downwards from what had been the head. They wrapped around the throat beneath the jaws, a sickly, yellow band of a score of lidless pupils. More eyes blinked from the lengths of the tentacles and limbs. They were scattered across the torso and along the tail. They even gazed from the top and underside of the jaws. The monster looked everywhere at once, and it hurled its prayer at all it saw. And, moving through the body, like the vision of a man trapped under ice, was Howson. His agony seemed to mock me, as if to say, "Here, here, here is the religious certainty you need." I did not want to believe that I was seeing his soul, trapped forever in the monstrous body, screaming as he sought an escape from torment, an escape that would never be his. I remember the appearance of the monster and the details of its form, as if I had had the luxury of contemplating a statue. The truth is that the horror of the creature was so great, it impressed itself upon me in all its hideous detail in an instant. It crashed to the deck and rose. I gasped in horror. Then I ran. Mesa and Kren were within the abomination's reach. Mesa leapt over the bank of screens and fell on the other side. Kren was only a few feet away from the creature, and its impact staggered her. She stumbled and fired her plasma cutter at the same time. The beam cut up along the monster's neck and into one of its maws. The flesh parted, hissing, and then closed again, as if she had been firing at water.
"Praise!"
the monster roared with 100 voices. It lunged forwards and grabbed Kren's head with one of its clawed hands. The talons closed over her like a cage. As they did, Howson's face suddenly emerged from the palm, his shrieks clear again and suffused with a suffering beyond my comprehension. His mouth opened as if on a hinge and snapped shut on Kren's face. Her muffled scream sounded like drowning. Flesh hissed, and my last glimpse of Kren was of her head starting to stretch apart, skull and flesh flowing into the hand of the beast. She was still screaming. Mesa was on his feet again and running, and the three of us fled the bridge. The liquid, cracking, choking sounds of Kren being absorbed followed us. We sprinted down the hall and into the ring corridor. Ahead of me, Roan paused for a moment and then turned left.
"Where?"
Mesa gasped. "Escape pod," said Roan.
"Good," I thought.
I didn't care that the reasons not to take the pod had not been resolved. All I cared about was that we leave the Ligurian at once. Kren's death had bought us a head start in our flight, but it was a short one. As we tore past the entrance to Beta Bay, I heard the songs of the beast rattle down the corridor. It was following us. Midway between Alpha and Beta, Roan turned into a narrow accessway. It sloped upward steeply, the ceiling angling in parallel, and ended at a nondescript wall. Roan opened a panel in it, yanked the recess lever down, and the wall rose into the ceiling, revealing a small airlock and the hatch of the escape pod. Roan turned the wheel on the hatch, the clamps released, and she pulled the door open. I followed Mesa into the pod. Before Roan followed us, she re-engaged the airlock, and the wall slid down while she closed the hatch. The slam and clunk of metal sealed us off from the rest of the facility. The sound of the monster's pursuit became almost inaudible. A huge sigh of relief racked my body. Only a hair's breadth of dignity differentiated it from a sob. The interior of the pod was cramped. The chamber was circular, with a ceiling so low that I could not stand without stooping. There were four seats with grab webbing facing each other from the perimeter of the space. The controls were in the centre, within easy reach of any of the seats, and so leaving almost no space to stand. We sat, whether we wanted to or not. Roan and Mesa watched the hatch, their shoulders hunched with tension. Mesa and I had dropped our plasma cutters, but Roan still carried hers. She aimed it at the hatch. After a minute, perhaps remembering how little difference Kren's weapon had made, she lowered it again. Her eyes never wavered from the hatch, though. The noises the monster made as it lurched through the ring corridor were less faint than they had been. I started holding my breath again. Neither Roan nor Mesa even glanced at the pod's controls.
"What are we waiting for?" I whispered. "Why are we going?"
"No point," said Roan. "We already explained."
"But we have to leave."
It was all I could do not to shout. "We can't."
"So we're just going to wait for it to find us? We've nowhere to run."
"The pod's oxygen supply is self-contained," Mesa explained with forced calm. "There are no points of connection between the pod and the station except the hatch." I began to understand. The monster could not reach us through the shafts. If it did not know where we were, we might be safe for a short while. I had the refuge I had prayed for. I did not like it. In spite of everything, I wanted someone to launch the pod. Better to take our chances in the void, I thought. Better to die that death than the ones the abomination had in store for us. My thoughts must have been visible on my face. Roan said,
I'm not ready to die at all. Not yet.
I clenched my jaw and nodded. No one said anything else. The slithering, shuffling, scraping movement of the monster drew closer.
Hail!
The horror sang.
Hail! 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 Change! Change! Change for the Lord of Fader! Hail!
I wanted to close my eyes and cover my ears. Every instinct urged me to flee from the unholy sounds and prayer. I backed up until I was pressed against the rear wall of the pod. My heart pounded a deafening beat. It was too loud. The monster would hear me breathing. It would hear my fear. It would find me. Closer now. The hatch seemed thin as gossamer. The beast was huge. It must fill the halls beyond, I thought. It owned the Ligurian. We were the hunted at bay. Trapped in a burrow with no exit. I stared at the hatch and waited for the claws to tear through the metal.
Embrace the maelstrom of Flaxal!
The monster cried with one set of voices. A dozen other thin, whistling throats howled,
Hail! 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 Changer of ways!
The first set broke up into overlapping dialogue.
Accept the Lord of Fate. Receive his touch. Receive his gift.
The huge mass of the monster scuttled and squelched closer yet. It stopped for a moment, and I knew it was at the entrance to the accessway. Then it began moving again. Gradually, the songs faded away. My knees gave out, and I slumped into the nearest seat. I accepted the brief reprieve with gratitude. I saw the shoulders of the other two relax, slightly.
That gives us a bit of time, said Mesa. And we've learned something to our advantage, Roan added.
What? I asked, disbelieving.
It doesn't reason well. If at all. It did not come up the ramp. It saw an empty corridor and a blank wall, and kept going. That is something, said Mesa. We know we can hide. I don't know for how long, though. We have to destroy it.
How? I said. The plasma cutters don't hurt it anymore. What do we have that can kill it?
Nothing, said Roan. So our situation is unchanged. We have to get off the station. If we're lucky and we know where it is, I might be able to vent that sector, Mesa said. But that didn't do us any good before. So unless you can think of a way of getting it back into Gamma Bay...
It doesn't have to be Gamma Bay, Roan said. Her eyes narrowed as the idea took form. All we have to do is lure it onto one of the wrecks... Then release it.
That's cleaner than breaking the station, Mesa agreed. Which wreck?
The mass conveyor, I suggested. In case we have to use the colony ship.
We never said we could use it, said Roan.
You did say it wouldn't be impossible.
She grimaced, but Mesa nodded. He's right, he said. We should keep all our options open. All right. Roan said. The Cardinal Vizain, then. It's on Beta. That's close.
How is this going to work? I asked.
I have to reach the bridge, said Mesa.
Which you can't until we're sure the creature isn't after you, said Roan. So stay here until it starts pursuing me. You should be able to hear it. I cleared my throat. Pursuing us, I said. My voice cracked. Roan looked at me. Are you sure? Of course I was. And of course I wasn't. I knew every way that I was unfit for this. I was unfit for the path my life had taken. I should never have been on the battlefield. I should never have been outside an administrative warren, surrounded by scribes and thickets of bureaucratic parchment. But I survived the battlefield, and managed not to dishonour myself, even though I suffered through the hypocrisy of my sermons. I was where I should not be once again, and I had already done enough to bring shame to the rest of my life. Ever since I had unleashed the horror, I had been a cowering mess, unable to help, looking entirely to others to save my foolish hide. It was time for that to stop. I can tell what you're thinking, and you're right. It wasn't honour that pushed me at that moment. It was the pain I felt every time Roan looked at me. I loved her. I could not bear to think that she no longer loved me. I had to banish the coldness in her gaze. I wanted her to look at me as she once had. Before, she had believed too much in me and my commitment to duty. Now, she didn't believe in me at all. There wasn't much I could do to fight the monster, but I did think I could change how Roan saw me. I could win her love back. This would be my redemption. It was, I believe, the only redemption I cared about. I know what this sounds like. I know you think I'm ridiculous. You think this was hardly the moment for a foolish romantic gesture. Perhaps. Perhaps my behaviour was based on my fantasies of who Roan and I were, rather than our realities. But isn't that love? Isn't it about idealization? Aren't we supposed to see the perfection of the loved one, and then, in order to be worthy, strive to become the perfected dream of ourselves? There is so little light in the galaxy. We must fight with all our souls to hold on to the glimmers that come our way. You think I am a fool. I think you are cynical. I think you have never loved, not truly, or you would understand my need to save myself by saving Roan. Yes, by saving Roan. That was what I aspired to. That was what I believed I was taking the first step towards. I'm not ashamed of that. I am proud. Two of us are a more convincing target, I said. The beast will have no reason not to follow us, and two have a better chance of survival.
True enough, said Mesa.
Roan looked doubtful, but she nodded. I can see how we'll lure it into the ship, I said. How do we get out again and keep it in there long enough for Mesa to release the Vizain?
Explosive charges, Roan said. Go in, double back once it follows us, and blow up the way behind us. We don't have to hold it long. The moment I see you come out, said Mesa, I'll close the outer door. We'll use some of the charges that were going to separate Gamma Bay. We know where they are.
Right, said Mesa.
So, we all know what we're doing, do we?
Roan gave a short bark of laughter.
I don't know about that, but we know we're going to try.
Lots of running, I said. I can do that. That was my attempt at gallows humour. It fell flat, even for me.